Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning, and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and also through our links to Boston, Massachusetts. The show also is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call today at 633-3700. Ask one of our very skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants, and that's our guarantee. And also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. And if you've already been to a lender, you've talked to somebody about home financing, whether it's a new house or an existing house or even a refinancing of the one you have right now, call about the Second Look program. It's one of the best deals anywhere in the mortgage world. 633-3700. Ask them about it. They'll just take a look at it. It's a second look. We'll take a look at that, whatever you have from any other lender. And if we can't beat it, then we'll give you a gift certificate. So it's as easy as that, 633-3700 for a personalized, customized service that will knock your socks off. And don't forget about the first ever 24/7 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale, not just here in Buffalo, Niagara, but all in any market we serve. But the local number is 716-631-4800. All you have to do is enter the street number of the house you want to know about. Doesn't have to be our listing, could be anybody's listing. Signs in front of a house, just get the street number, enter that street number, and then the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street names, select the one you want, you'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property, all automatically, just that fast, anytime in any market we serve on any listing, whether it's ours or any other broker's. It's a very interesting time in the marketplace today, and one of the things that we're going to be talking about is one particular part of that market, which is in the new housing market, which I think kind of people have forgotten about a little bit since all this came down. But before we get to that, I want to remind everybody that Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider for our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Rochester Americans. And they're all still here with us. Now we just need to get them back on the field or the ice, and hopefully that will happen sometime very soon. We are live at WBEN 930 AM. If you'd like to participate in today's show, 803-0930 is the number here in the studio, 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, star 930 for mobile. Those are all free calls. Join us on the air if you'd like. You can also text us at 30930, and we can try to answer your question, whether it's about real estate or anything else we may be talking about at the time. We have a very special show for you today. As I mentioned earlier, the kind of part of the market people don't talk much about today is new homes. And to bring us up to date on what's going on with new construction here in Western New York and really probably in the whole country, we have the president of the Buffalo Niagara Builders Association, Susan Ballard, and one of the members of the board, presidential appointee on the Buffalo Niagara Builders Association Board of Directors. That's Bill Tynes. Good morning, Bill, and good morning, Susan.
Good morning,
Peter.
It's good to have you with us. Let's start with just a description of what exactly the Builders Association is.
Well, Peter, as the president of the Buffalo Niagara Builders Association, I thank you for having us on this morning.
My pleasure.
Let's talk about residential construction in Western New York. It is vital to our community and the economic well-being of our community. Our association represents the builders, the building material suppliers, the vendors and contractors that work on all of the residential homes that are built in Western New York. We represent them in terms of guidance and leadership about industry standards and changes in the industry. We lobby on their behalf locally at the state level and at the national level to make sure that their voice is included and represented. Bill, in particular, has been very involved at the state and national level, having been the president of the New York State Builders Association already, and he's been a representative of New York at the National Association of Home Builders level. So, Bill, I think you can speak maybe a little bit more fluently about the value of what our association does. for the local area and our contractors and builders?
Well, I think we try to represent the industry and the interest in the industry, and let the region know that the interests of the industry and the interests of the region are one and the same. Everyone is really a builder in our view. We're all part of the same community. Everything that we do, it touches every segment of the economy. So when you look at the kind of metrics that are usually associated in normal times with economic reports of the health of the nation's economy, one of the fundamental benchmarks that is always cited right up front is building starts. And there's a good reason for that, because it's not only the guys that do the excavations and build the foundations, or roofers and framers and electricians and plumbers and the folks, the drywallers and the folks that are involved in the physical construction of the home, but it's also the ancillary businesses and the support of that enterprise, which involve, you know, attorneys and engineers and surveyors and utility contractors. Then that also brings into what happens with the people that occupy these homes, which, you know, if you are someone who sells cars, you park cars in the garages that we build, and the people that buy those cars are the occupants of these homes. We're really building communities. So if you own a restaurant, the people that patronize restaurants are the people that live in our homes. And it's the same thing for every single segment of the economy. It's not just people that are buying furniture and appliances and those things that go directly in the home. It's all the other support services, goods and services that are involved in the entire economy and the entire supply chain. So we really are fundamental, and our interests are the same as those of the community.
Well, it sounds like you'd be an essential industry, yet the recent COVID-19 pandemic, during this time, you've been deemed non-essential. So how has the industry operated during these difficult times?
We've had a difficult time. We're struggling, quite frankly. Until the 27th of March, we were considered essential. All construction was considered essential in New York State. Around the rest of the country, home building, residential home construction has continuously been considered essential. As it stands right now, New York State is the only state in the entire union where you cannot start a new house today.
Well, what happened? Why were we deemed non-essential here as building houses?
Well, it began with the daily briefings by the governor. So we were essential up until the 27th, as I said. On the 26th of March, during the governor's daily briefing, he had a question at the Q&A at the end of his briefing from a New York Times reporter who had just done a study, or a report rather, and his article was about some construction workers in high-rise construction building residential units in New York City, right in the heart of the pandemic, where the most intense density is and the most intense construction activity would be. And these folks were concerned about their safety for viral transmission and what they would be bringing home to their families. And there was an article written about that. And so that day on the 26th, that reporter asked the governor whether he really believed that all construction was essential. Should that be included? You know, and the governor said, you know, I tend to agree with you. We're going to look into that. And the next morning at 11 o'clock, the executive order was revised. And there were further definitions added to what essential construction was. And what was not on that list was residential construction.
So what happened? You just sent everybody home?
No, the executive order went on. It had definitions for what constituted essential, which was major bridges and roads, repair of major infrastructure, the construction of hospitals and affordable housing. And it had those kind of definitions in place. And then it went on to say that if you had an existing construction site, you were allowed to progress that site to the point where it was safe. And then it went on further to say that that if you could work with a single worker would not be subject to these rules and could continue. So the industry took the position that what constituted safe, which is defined in the building code of the state of New York, was to progress the home to the point of enclosure. Remember, we have, at that time, kids home from school. Schools were closed. There are people going out for exercise, wandering neighborhoods, and people like to explore when they're out and about, and construction sites are dangerous places. So it was our belief that what we needed to do was enclose these structures and protect them from the elements, which is another part of the building code, which is required. We don't want to have mold propagation or other things like that. Plus, you've got interior finishes that are at risk. So we wanted to enclose these houses, protect them from the elements, and then put windows and doors and lock them and make them secure so that no unauthorized entry could occur. And then at that point, we would work with a single worker. So we began doing that process, and pretty quickly, it became clear that every building inspector in New York State was going to interpret the definition of what constituted safe construction differently. And in New York State, that's the law. The code enforcement officers are the final arbiters of the code. They read it and determine and interpret it as to what it means in their jurisdiction.
Well, this is obviously subject to interpretation then. So what would happen? Were there construction policemen driving around checking things out? What happened?
We began to ask for guidance from the New York State Department of State Division of Building Codes and Standards, and we asked that a technical guidance be given to the code enforcement officials across the state, which they really didn't want to move on that because in the opinion of the Department of State, it's a home rule state, and what constitutes safe in an executive order is not the same thing as what constitutes safe in the building code. And so they were not really anxious to give that kind of guidance, and they stepped back a little bit. And so it continued with everybody doing their own thing. So where we could build houses and continue them, we did. Where we had to suspend work, we did. We did that as well. And then we began to work with our individual associations under the umbrella of the New York State Builders Association. There are 16 locals, of which Buffalo Niagara, that Susan's the president of, is one. And from our 16 locals, we began to appeal to Empire State Development and the regions, because, as you know, the state is divided into 10 regions, which is not only the case for Empire State Development, but it's the same thing for the Department of Environmental Conservation or the Department of Transportation. The state has 10 areas, and we began in our respective areas to lobby to show folks what the reason was, why we needed to be considered essential. And I would also point out that when it talked about emergency work and in the definition of the executive order, it seemed as though most of the context of those descriptions centered around either the emergency repair of infrastructure or things that were related to viral transmission construction, building hospitals. And as you know, there were a lot of efforts underway at the time with the Corps of Engineers. And
right. So how is your effort gone, Bill? I mean, the state hasn't really responded by changing much, have they?
No, things have it. And we've been trying to remind folks that one of the emergencies that we respond to is environmental emergencies, climate change. It's not just the viral transmissions that are that's the emergency of the day, but it's not the only emergency we deal with. And the governor is very fond of pointing out that climate change is real, and that these events happen with increasing severity and increasing frequency, and we need to be prepared for these things. Resiliency is a big, big word that's used in the administration. And so we would remind folks that when there's a Superstorm Sandy, or there's a flood, or there's a fire, any kind of big blizzard where big snow loads are in place and roofs start to collapse, the people you call are the trades that we use to build houses. Mm-hmm. We're out of business. There won't be anybody there to pick up the phone when you need us for an emergency. We are an essential business because we keep those trades in business in between those emergencies.
Well, unfortunately, the government doesn't seem to agree with you. We have a caller on line. This is Donna from Tonawanda. Donna, how can we help you?
Hi, thanks. I saw an article in the paper several weeks ago, maybe even months ago now, about so many rental units being built in the city of Buffalo and how the people who will occupy those will be transient. They're not going to stay, and the cost is prohibitive. In the town of Tonawanda where I live, I'm getting older and I would love a condominium, but there's some state regulations that developers are making a lot more apartment buildings than they are condominiums. And I don't want to give up the equity that I've accrued throughout my lifetime by moving into senior apartments. I wouldn't mind going into a condominium and keeping my equity, but I don't want to move into.
Well, let me jump in here, Donna, because I think what you're referring to is what we've done a couple of shows on, which is the adaptive reuse of existing buildings. And in so doing, assuming that they're, in many cases, historic structures, there are what are called historic tax credits that allow the developer to effectively leverage those credits and be able to bring the apartments into the market at an affordable rate. Without those tax credits, it would be next to impossible in a city like Buffalo. So I think that's what you're referring to, and I believe that's what the articles have been about in terms of the adaptive reuse. For new construction, though, brand new construction, which is really what we're talking about today, it makes a lot of sense to build condominiums. I'm going to ask Bill Tine and also Susan Ballard to comment on what it would take, I guess, to bring more condominiums into the market, because this is something we hear often.
I'll jump in on this one, Bill, for Peter. The question regarding, I think really what we're talking about is a variety of housing choices, because we have an older housing stock in our Western New York communities, and we don't have necessarily the type of housing that people are looking for. The idea of condominiums is very attractive to both builders and the public. But one of the challenges that we face is the regulations that don't allow certain types of properties to be built in certain communities. Bill has a land planning background where he's been involved in this for decades. But as a former builder myself and being involved in the sales side of real estate now, I can tell you that the regulations and restrictions have made many of those projects cost prohibitive for builders and for buyers. Bill, I think you have lobbied numerous communities for the opportunity to build condos or condo status projects to meet the needs of the community in terms of the choice of housing, and have been met with resistance at the municipal level in terms of zoning requirements, and also then once the builders get involved, there's also cost prohibitive elements in terms of the regulations, both at the state level and the local level.
Which regulations specifically add to the cost of construction? Do you know, Bill? I mean, what could you be specific about it? Because, I mean, it's easy to say there's regulations for this and that and they make things cost more, but what specifically is Susan referring to here?
One of the biggest is the element of filing an association, which is also at the heart of most of the objection to this form of housing and this form of ownership, because there's a perception that by getting condo status that and you'll get cheaper taxes and that you're building the same thing that everyone else has, but you're getting a quote break unquote on your taxes. That's not justified. And I think number one, we don't think that's true, because the case is actually we're building a unit that doesn't have public infrastructure, and so these units don't get public services. So they're also typically a form that doesn't have any kids that go to the school district. So they're typically there's a lot of revenue being generated. They're higher density. So actually, if the community would look at these developments per acre instead of per unit, they would find that they're actually getting more tax revenue and spending almost a significant amount less in cost, and they're way ahead of the game. But the owner also, even though they're getting less in taxes, they have to provide their own services. So they're paying association fees that pick up those tasks. So when they do those kind of things, they have to not only pay those fees, but those associations have to be filed. They're reviewed and approved by the New York State Attorney General. And when you build the project, you have to bear those expenses up front. So you form an association and you do it for the entire development. And if you've only sold three units, then you still pay the association fees. The developer has to pick up those fees for all of the unsold units and picks up that proportionate share, because as soon as that offering plan is in place, those fees have to be collected and maintained. It also is typically the case where you can't build like a single family house, one house incrementally, to bear the cost of building the structure and then selling it and moving on to the next one. You have to bear the expense of building an entire building.
So is it different in other parts of the country?
There are different rules in other parts of the country, but in general, condominium law is pretty much this.
So condominiums are just a more difficult process, more time-consuming, regulatory-wise, et cetera.
Well, there's certainly more time in terms of processing offering plans, and that has been a real issue for the association, because that time it takes to process and get that, secure that approval from the Attorney General has really been stretched out. It's getting longer and longer all the time, and we're not really sure why that is.
So just back to Donna's question for a second here. The real point is that it's not so much a developer choosing to build apartments versus choosing to build condominiums from a ground-up basis. What Donna was referring to, I think, was the converting an older building that might have been a warehouse or something into apartments, as opposed to taking a virgin piece of land in Tonawanda someplace or Clarence or something and building condominiums from the ground up. And I think she seems to be more interested in obviously a condominium that would be new and something that that might be available in her part of town. Now, a lot of this has to do with the relative cost, too, of the end product, and we'll come back and talk about it. We do have to go to a break, and we'll be back with more with Susan Ballard, the president of the Buffalo Niagara Builders Association, and Bill Tine, also a director of that association, after these very important messages.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available not just here in Buffalo, Niagara, but all across upstate and through our links out to Arizona and also to Boston, Massachusetts. You'll also find access to a complete set of homeownership services at HuntRealEstate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and for more information about our exclusive program that allows you to effectively buy the before and live the after by rolling the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, knowing exactly what you're going to be in for when you buy that older home, call Hunt Mortgage today, 633-3700, and ask for details. Also ask about our pre-purchase commitment when you have them on the phone, our second look program, which is the best deal in town. We'll actually give you a gift certificate just by calling 633-3700. That's if you've already gone to another lender and have been qualified or whatever they may want to call it. Check with us first and after, I'm sorry, second, and we'll make sure that it's worth your while. 633-3700. We also have a customer service center, the only one of its kind in North America, that allows you to get information about anything relative to real estate, whether you're considering buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have. 633-9400 gets you access. And remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's a seller security plan available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. And just this week, Hunt Real Estate ERA was honored as the number one real estate company within the ERA organization worldwide. We're very happy to accept that honor. And Susan Ballard from our company is also a part of that group that made that happen. She's with us today live remote along with Bill Tine. Susan also is the president of the Buffalo Niagara Builders Association, which is the purpose of today's show, to discuss new construction. And I don't want to keep going down one particular little rabbit hole here, Bill, in terms of the condominium thing and the difficulty with regulations. I want to go back to just kind of give us a scope of how much new construction takes place. New residential construction takes place, single-family homes, I presume, condominiums, in Western New York now, and what's a good year for us here in Western New York?
About 1,000 homes, single-family homes and another 500 multifamily units in area Niagara counties.
Okay, and multifamily would be, that include apartments?
Apartments, attached units, apartments, condominiums. It's really just a form of ownership, which, by the way, not to prolong that issue for the previous caller, but I will say that the larger the building in those urbanized areas, the more likely it is that they'll be mixed use. They won't be a single use. Smaller buildings tend to be utilizing these public policies to preserve the character and charm of old buildings and not seeing them demolished. But the larger buildings tend to be mixed use, so they'll have a blend of condominiums, apartments, commercial properties, office properties. They're so big that they put all a full spectrum of uses within them.
Mm-hmm.
Find condos even in those urbanized areas if you look for them.
So how do we compare with other parts of the country and even in the state? Is 1,000 units for a community our size, is that a good number, or would you say it's light? Or what would you like it to see, both Susan and Bill, in terms of what would be a healthy dynamic in your mind in terms of new construction in a community like ours?
Well, in my career, unfortunately, I've been at this a long time for my own personal longevity, but there was a time when we were building close to 3,600 single-family homes area Niagara region. So it's declined steadily over the decades, but it's still been sustaining the businesses that are here, and we'd like to see more, of course. Right now, nationally, we're building about a million homes a year underneath what the market would support. The country's been growing, and there's a lot of home formation of new homes that new families that need homes as people immigrate into the country, and as divorces participate in that, new forms households are formed, and so there needs to be housing to support that demand, and we're under capacity right now.
Nationwide?
Yes.
So why would some areas be building more than, say, we're building here? What's the dynamic influencing the number of new homes being built in any community?
One, it would be zoning and a resistance to seeing higher density development or that is more affordable and within the reach of the masses. There is the growth of a region will impact that. So while we have new household formation, our area is not growing as quickly as someplace like Washington, D.C., for example. So there's more demand in some of those areas. So we can build what there's demand for, and we stick to that demand. That's a big part of it. It isn't just simply regulation. It is also a function of demand. So we don't want to overbuild.
Okay. And so, Susan, as you work with the members of the Builders Association, what is their forecast now for 2020? Obviously, it's changed since the pandemic, but what do you see happening in the balance of the year? Will we resume quickly when we're allowed to go back and start building again? And will we reach that 1,000 number this year, do you think, Susan, or are we just are we stalled for a while?
Well, we've been temporarily stalled in terms of being able to move forward with construction, but the builders themselves have been continuously responding to requests from the public to have lots put on hold, to work on blueprints, planning their homes. So the demand in our area for the new construction that's available seems to be steady. So we anticipate that when the governor and the Empire State Development remove the barriers to construction commencing in our region, we think that, or we hope that it will start up quickly. One of the challenges that we have is a limited labor pool, and that's been the case for years. Construction has not been necessarily the number one profession that is promoted to young men and women as they're beginning to make plans for what their future might involve. So we do have a limited labor pool, and we're certainly hoping that this pause and delay will not cause us to have additional problems with labor. We do know that in some of the areas of the state where they are bordering neighbor states where construction has been able to continue, our workers have been tempted to go across the borders to take on work in those areas. So we're hoping that we will be able to return to full speed with our crews. The demand from the public seems to be there. So I don't think that we are going to see this as housing lost, but perhaps just housing delayed for the balance of 2020.
There are many people out there, as you know, Susan and Bill, you certainly know, that just want a new home, that there's something about building a new home that excites them and drives their creative spirit. And it's just, it's a wonderful experience for those that have been through it, or able to go through it. There's a couple of questions I have, though, back to what you said, Susan, in terms of the educational infrastructure. That's pretty much shut down now, too. But prior to that, was your organization working with the school systems and the colleges to address this need of for skilled contractors, skilled workers?
We do, and we have for years. As a matter of fact, 2 weeks ago, I interviewed two young men in the Western New York area for scholarships that are issued, the William Morehouse Scholarship, to individuals that are interested in pursuing a career in construction. And we've been very supportive of encouraging that. It is a bit of an uphill battle in that the push for further education, continuing education after graduation from high school has been, in most cases, to put people into, baccalaureate programs and not necessarily having encouraged students to pursue the construction trades. But we put a focus on that at the local level, and New York State has really been promoting that. That scholarship, the William Morehouse Scholarship, is through the New York State Builders Association. And one of the young men is continuing with that scholarship, and the other, we're hoping, the high school senior who will be graduating this year will receive that scholarship and be able to enroll in a construction technology program in the fall. And the returning student would be at Alfred in the construction program there to graduate and then return back to the community. Both of them hope to one day start their own construction companies.
Would it be safe to say if I went back to school, or anybody went to school and learned a trade, that I'd pretty much have a job?
Without a doubt. There are ample opportunities for trades, but also for those that have entrepreneurial spirit and would like to start a business someday. When they graduate from high school, there's an opportunity for them to go right into a career without having necessarily to go to school for formal training. They're not paying their exorbitant costs for the college education. They're not taking out student loans. They're earning an income, and they're accelerating their savings and their opportunity to invest in their own future and start a business sometimes before their classmates have even graduated from their four-year academic programs. Those have chosen to go on to the baccalaureate route. So there's ample opportunities for employees and entrepreneurs who might want to begin with their own businesses. There's so many trades that are looking for labor right now.
And if you were to zero in on that, we've got about a minute before we have to go to break. If you're to zero in on what specifically is it? Carpentry? Is it masonry? Where's the growth opportunities within the construction trades?
It is absolutely 100% across the board. If someone wanted to work in the concrete fields, in like you said, masonry, plumbing, electrical work. There has been a shortage of labor nationwide in the trades, in all the construction careers. So really, it's any level of interest that someone might have. There's no shortage of opportunities there.
Well, we have to go to break in a minute, but we have a couple texts in. One refers to what we were talking about earlier, where we were talking about regulation, and someone writes, "Don't dare question King Cuomo." And someone else said, "They say everything is local, but hasn't the business community been hampered by differing rules and regulations like the condo situation? Isn't that throughout the nation?" And I'd just ask you in a word, yes or no, is it constant throughout the nation, or is it worse here, Bill?
Constant throughout, yes.
Okay, great. I've got to go to a break. We'll be right back with more from our officers after these important messages.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and you just heard about them. That's home of the low rate and closing cost guarantee and also the pre-purchase commitment and the second look program. Call today, 633-3700. I'm live remote today, respecting social distance, with the president of the Buffalo Niagara Builders Association, Susan Ballard, and also with Bill Tyne, who is also the presidential appointee on the Buffalo Niagara Board of Builder Associated Board of Directors, and a person with vast experience in not just building, but in the association representation that's required at the state and local and national level to make sure that we can get things done in our community. And I want to thank you for your service, Bill, over these many years, and certainly thank you, Susan, for taking on this task in a year like this. When you started your tenure as president, I bet you had no idea this would happen. What happened? How did it affect you? I mean, all of a sudden one day, I mean, you talked about the continuum, and Bill talked about how it went from essential to non-essential, that whole mess that happened there in March. But what was going on? I mean, what were your members saying to you? How were they reacting?
Well, I think that in the initial days, there was a fair amount of confusion. As Bill said earlier, you know, there weren't consistent rules and restrictions being implemented across the state because of the amount of decision-making and power that rests in the hands of the code enforcement officer. So there was a lot of conversation about how to answer all the questions that not just the builders had, but the building suppliers and the contractors themselves, as well as the town officials. A lot of conversations were taking place at the local level, and most of us that serve on the board of directors of the Builders Association have for years had really good relationships with the municipal officials. Even though we have to go before them and get projects approved, and you know, in some cases we're adversaries. In this case, I think we were all advocates for doing the right thing. So there was a lot of you know, immediacy about how to address the rules. But then, you know, as any association should, we went to work to see how can we advocate on behalf of our members to allow construction to resume and resume safely. We've always believed that new construction could continue and can continue to be safe. The environment is very much different than a manufacturing facility or an office building. So we felt that some of the restrictions that were being put in place were a little unfair or unjust relative to the conditions that we could safely operate under. And we knew that the economic impact was going to be pretty significant, as housing is dependent upon as a driver of the economy. You know, in the first quarter of 2020, construction was responsible for 15% of U.S. GDP. So, you know, we recognize that we need to be leaders, and I think the National Association of Home Builders and the New York State Builders Association set good examples for us to follow and to.
Well, let's look at the reentry. I mean, you've got to be, you're in phase one of the governor's four-phase program. So, how are you planning for reentry into what might be deemed normal business?
Bill, I'm going to ask you to take this one because you've been at the forefront of our conversations with Lieutenant Governor Hochul and the other representatives about our plan for reopening.
Well, construction is considered a low-risk business. It, in residential construction, is specifically listed as one of the phase one businesses to go back to work as soon as a region can meet the seven metrics that the government, the governor's office has put in place.
So how are you planning? How are you working with the builders to actually plan for that restart?
Say what?
How are you working with the builders to plan for that restart, Bill?
Well, one of the requirements is that there be a workplace protocol program in place that has been submitted to the governor's office, and it was approved this week. So that is in place. We're informing all the members what those protocols are so that they're ready and prepared, that they have PPE equipment ready to go to provide all their workers with. We believe we are the perfect business to go back. We shouldn't be shut down right now. There's a fundamental misunderstanding of what construction is, and part of that, residential construction is, and part of that's because you don't find us in a big factory with 1,000 employees working under one roof.
Oh, no, I get that. But what besides the PPE, what else are you saying? What's in that workplace protocol?
Social distancing, maintaining a training program with and an interview with the employees who go back to the site to make sure that they haven't been infected. We have to maintain logs of visitors to the site for tracing purposes after the fact. And after that, we pretty much are already compliant with everything that needs to be done because of the nature of our work. We work in a low-density setting, outdoors, in structures that don't engage the public because we're building new structures where no one lives in them yet.
Right.
And our workforce, typically, even though it takes 6 months to build a house and we have 150 people that touch that home in the construction of it, they typically work five at a time when they're putting it together over the course of that period. So they're separated.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the trades or OSHA requirements have to wear eye protection, respirators, gloves. It's part of what we have to do for safety purposes already. We're the perfect business to go back to work.
So you're ready. So we've got a caller in line. This is John from Rochester. John, how can we help you?
Hey, Peter. Hey, Bill and Susan. Listen, Bill, I've heard that subdivision development has skyrocketed over the last 10 years because of regulations. There's a regulation that may come down the pipe very shortly regarding de minimis levels of wetland area, what the state DEC controls, going down from 12 acres to 2 acres. That would add to the burden of developing a subdivision. And where is that legislation at right now?
That's a good, very good question.
It's in front of the state legislature, and it's a ticket from 12.4 acres to 1 acre, not two. And the real challenge is that when you take it down to 1 acre, there is also the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation also regulates an adjacent area that's 100 feet wide that's commonly called the buffer area beyond the wetland. When you have, just as an example, I mean, it changes with the geometry of a wetland, but if it's a typical 12.4 acre wetland, if you put a 100-foot buffer around that, depending on the geometry, it might be another 4 acres or maybe even up to 8 acres, depending on the configuration. But because these wetlands can go down to 1 acre, you could have a 1 acre wetland that could have a 20-acre wetland around it, depending on how it's configured. If it's 1 acre and it's a ditch, so it's 10 feet wide, and you have 100 feet on each side of it, you'd have 22 acres of buffer area being regulated along with the 1 acre of actual wetland.
So, Bill, don't they introduce this legislation just about every year?
They have, and in the past, it has always passed the New York State Assembly. It has never gotten through the New York State Senate. This year, it's going to get through the Senate, we think, because the politics have changed.
So what will happen?
If the governor signs it, it'll become law, and we'll have to deal with it. So right now, we're trying to educate the legislators as to what the implications are and the impact and the necessity of it. Remember, there's two wetland programs and different agencies that regulate them. So not only does New York State regulate wetlands, but so does the federal government. And the federal government doesn't have that 1 acre lower limit. They have no lower limit, so they can regulate a tenth of an acre.
We have so much water in this state. You know, we have ponds and rivers and streams and ditches and all kinds of water, and we get a lot of rain on top of that. How are we going to get anything done?
It's really challenging for Western New York. We live in the Lake Plain. So if you're in another part of the country where it's a more arid environment, it's not nearly as big an issue for them. In Western New York and the Lake Plains, they're now putting in place regulations
that are regulating not something that's rare and threatened, but something that's common and found everywhere, because the regulations are so, the definition of what constitutes a wetland are so liberal that almost your, everyone's backyard would classify, literally, because mm-hmm. regulations say that if water is to the to within 18 inches of the surface of the ground for seven consecutive days during the growing season, once every 2 years, it qualifies as a wetland. That's,
well, that's all of Western New York.
New York.
I mean, that's the whole state practically. Well, this is we've got about
really now to you know earlier question. Right now, the cost of a new home, 27% of it is directly attributable to the cost of regulatory compliance.
Well, that's an important point. And is it that much different here than in other parts of the country?
No, it's the same all over the country. It's real burden.
So
incredibly regulated industry.
And that's were there a series of incidents a long time ago that were people, you know, were hurt on a building a single family home someplace that have caused people to be so, I guess, concerned about this? Or is it were there bad methodologies in the past that we've hopefully improved upon? Or is it just the fact that there just is more and more regulation no matter where you go?
More and more regulation, no matter where you go. There's also an attitude that is out there that everyone wants a new home. It's their dream. I mean, we're not just building shelter. We're building dreams for people. And once they've achieved that dream, they would prefer to see not a lot more of it.
Not my backyard. I've one more kind of topic I'd like to get to, which is kind of very, very hot topic across the country today, and that's the issue of affordable housing. The fact of the matter is that the cost of lumber is not that much different here than it is in Georgia, and we've got similar costs of most of the materials. The difference sometimes is in labor, depending on what kind of labor is used to build that house. But this is a serious question across the country of how we deliver a home that's affordable. What does the association, the Builders Association, do relative to that topic? Are they active in that topic? And if so, what's hot right now?
Susan, you going to take that one, or you want?
Well, I'll jump in. You know, there's been a couple times in the conversation where we've talked about is it more challenging here than it is elsewhere in the nation? And I would have to say that while it is challenging across the country and we are very regulated, there are some additional burdens that take place here in New York State that does make building at an affordable level more difficult. One example of that is regulations involving the New York State 240-241, which has absolute liability responsible to if someone were to fall, mm-hmm. and it causes the cost of insuring construction companies in New York State to be exorbitant compared to other states.
That's a scaffold law.
Correct.
All right. Well, we have got about a minute and a half left here, and I never like to leave the show on anything but a high note. So let's look out over the year, and what's the good news that you see out there, Susan and Bill, in terms of new construction here in Western New York?
Well, I would just repeat what I said before. I think we're going to come out of the gate strong. There's pent up demand from people who are interested in having their dream home built. I also think that people are going to contemplate different types of homes. After having been at home in the stay-at-home orders, it gives people an opportunity to think about different uses of spaces, home gyms, home offices, things that they might have not have contemplated before. And I think that there will continuously be a desire for new construction, and it's necessary for us in our area in order to increase the number of homes that are on the market, because we have such a tremendous demand. It will help across the board, not just with new construction.
I'll say amen to that.
I work at Forbes Capretto Homes. Our sales remain strong. We can't start any of these new contracts, but we continue to sell homes. We have a lot of interest. People are coming in to see us and reaching out virtually through the website. There's a tremendous amount of interest. There's a tremendous amount of demand that's still out there, and we're cautiously optimistic that we're going to convince the governor that we should go back to work before we meet all seven metrics. We're hoping to see construction be put back on the list of essential businesses.
We have to go here, but I'm certainly hoping that we can take advantage of the construction season that's at our hand. Susan Ballard, the president of the Buffalo Niagara Builders Association. Thanks for being with us today. Bill Tyne, also a member of the association and a builder with Forbes Capretto Homes. Thank you very much for being with us today. We'll be back next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is hunt country.